Yes, still morning. My name is Tristan van Strien. I'm the Deutsche Bank analyst here, the beverage analyst here at Deutsche Bank. It's my privilege and pleasure to today have Dimitris Loos, CEO of the Coca-Cola Hellenic Company, as well as Michalis Imellos, CFO of the Coca-Cola Hellenic Company. Instead of doing a presentation today, we're going to do a bit of a fireside chat. We're going to cover three areas during this chat. We're going to talk about their recent strategy. We're going to talk about some of the key markets, and then lastly, we'll talk about the broader Coca-Cola system. After each section, I will just open up the floor for a few questions, and we'll take it from there. So, Dimitris, Michalis, please join me. Good morning.
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 I just wanted to say, so last week you held your Capital Markets Day, and you have a new strategy, or the term of it, entering the new growth era. We have some very ambitious revenue and margin targets to 2020. So before we get into the details of those targets, perhaps why was now the right time to review your strategy and put something that explicit out there?
Well, Tristan, two reasons. I would start first by the environment, far more clear what's ahead in terms of volatility. We have both the stable part, and that is the established and developing, and we have also emerging. Volatility is an inherent part of emerging. What we have seen in the last couple of years is that even the stable part, due to the overall macro headwinds, has been destabilized. Now, moving forward, we see that some good indication of stability. And on top, what we have been doing the last couple of years, especially the focus behind established and developing, gives us confidence on the way forward. Also looking at IMF and the different inputs, we see that steadily we go back to the growth era. So that's the first reason. The second reason is a response to the needs of investors and analysts. We have done a study, a perception study, and in this we have seen that the relevant knowledge of Coca-Cola Hellenic and also of our ambitions was relatively, I would say, shallow. So we thought that reiterating our key strategic priorities while at the same time sharing a scorecard that would allow and would help the investors and the analysts follow the progress we'd make, that would be very helpful. Those are the two reasons.
Makes my model easier. When you set out those targets, obviously one of the things you've done, and I guess that explains you moved from a free cash flow target to a much more margin revenue target explicitly. When you set those targets, is that in agreement with the Coca-Cola Company, especially if they are one of your main shareholders?
Well, first of all, going to the first part of your question, we have been focusing quite a bit on free cash flow. As we move forward, we continue to focus on free cash flow. So that has not been a real change. Now, you heard us all during the investors' day saying that at the end of the day, alignment is a key element of working together, of winning together, and yes, the answer is we are aligned with the Coca-Cola Company.
They're happy with your revenue target and happy with your
margin. Absolutely.
Market.
At the end of the day, value creation starts from the top line and then filters down to the bottom line.
So if we get some of the details, one of your target, your first target is a 4 to 5% revenue target, which is quite punchy considering the last 5 years has been 1 to 2. Before last week, consensus was sitting at 3, quite a bit. Underlying that is the core assumption of volume growth, market volume growth of 1.5%. So what gives you that confidence when you just unpack that?
Okay, yes. We have this 1.5% as an average. If I can give you a bit more color on that, in the first 2 years, and that's 16 and 17, that's close to flattish, and then as we move 18, 19, and 20, we go close to almost 3%. Now, looking back the last couple of years, we have seen strong headwinds. In this environment, we were able to increase our revenue per case on an FX neutral on the average about 2%. So take into consideration those assumptions. And those assumptions, in principle, will determine how fast we go back. We feel confident with a list of additional actions we have that we elaborated on, both on volume and on revenue, as well as accelerating our cost initiatives, that we will achieve the 11% EBIT margin at the 2020.
Just, if we just go back on the price mix side of things, and again, it's been tough last few years around that. So what do you see changing in your environment, not assuming inflation is going to happen, but more in terms of your off-premise environment, the key accounts? They put a lot of pressure on your pricing. What gives you the ability to get above that, basically?
Well, you're absolutely right. In the last couple of years, we have seen organized trade, and in few countries within organized trade, discounters being the winning channel. In this environment, we have been, and taking into consideration also the overall deflationary environment, we had an average in the last 5 years of 2%, more or less, on an FX neutral. That's the average increase on revenue per case. On top of that, since 2012, we have been focusing with great results on improving our pack mix. This is something that will continue. So take into consideration the overall external environment, take into consideration the focus behind pack mix, and additionally the initiatives that we have with regards to value, and just to name a few, the connection with occasions behind meals, behind socializing, our strong focus behind Horeca. A very good example is what we have been doing in Italy and in a couple of other markets. What we see behind the new campaign, Taste the Feeling campaign, with a special focus on socializing and the immediate consumption channels, that gives us confidence that we will be able to do that.
And then within that, how you are one of the biggest, the main bottlers with the biggest non-carbonous portfolio, but when I look at some of your growth been driven by water, as an example, and that's quite revenue dilutive on a per case basis. So how should we think about that going forward?
Well, the category mix, more or less, in the next couple of years will not dramatically change. You're absolutely right. Water would be an element of growth, and that is something that we refer to. Now, within water, we are continuing with our focus behind single serve, so that will continue. On the other hand, we see juice growing pretty well. We see energy growing pretty well. Juice is almost twice in terms of revenue per case, higher. Revenue is energy is 2.5 times higher on revenue per case than the average. And I would like to conclude that with leaving behind that most probably we see two categories being the highest growth category. One is the energy that we referred, and the other is the low content of sugar or no calorie sparkling. So those are the two categories, obviously, with very contributive revenue per case.
Now, the last element of the top-line growth you presented to us was the idea of you, there's an opportunity for more market share still, which in the last 5 years has come and goes here and there. So what countries particularly, and is that more in carbs, non-carbs, where's the opportunity to take share from your competitors?
Well, first of all, it's both sparkling and non-carbonated beverage. And here I want to say two things. Obviously, having the best brands on earth, plus this magic triangle for Coca-Cola Hellenic, which is execution, route to market, and customer relationship. This is a triangle that we have been focusing in terms of capability and from a very high level. Now, referring to market share, I'll start with sparkling. We're about 40%, and we have been consistently increasing our market share. In 2015, that was about 80 basis points. A second player is about 19, But I'm referring to the second player more to share with you the overall opportunity for the rest of the market, 40% with B brand. And in the last couple of years, we have been winning equally from the second player and the B brand. Now, in terms of market share, there are few countries that we believe could go closer to the 40%, and those are big markets. That's like Russia, Ukraine, Poland, just to name a few, Czech, Slovak republics. So those are markets that are not at our group average. So obviously, there is an opportunity there. Now, moving to non-carbonated beverages, here we do see an opportunity, starting with the fact that our market share is below the 40% that we have seen in sparkling. And on top, we have been very vocal, saying that we are looking for bolt-on acquisitions in juice and in water. So there are two parallel initiatives, one which is the organic initiative, and the other one which is the bolt-on, that would allow us to accelerate market share in non-carbonated beverages.
So we can assume that a small part of your target is inorganic bolt-on.
Correct.
Bolt-on primarily.
Correct.
Just, I guess a big part and the biggest surprise on the day was just a very ambitious margin target to get back to the 11% you used to have. And again, you know, we modeled up to 9%, but 2018, I think the market had at 8.8 and kind of flattened from there. A lot of that's driven by OPEX savings, operational expenses. Can you just unpack where the savings sit for you within your platform?
You are right, Tristan, on the OPEX as percent of revenue being a key contributor to the margin growth. What we also said on the day, what is a paradox for somebody looking at this is assuming that this massive OPEX as percent of revenue improvement is driven by cost cutting or cost savings. In fact, the most important element of this OPEX as percent of revenue decline is coming from the operating leverage. In other words, over the years, through our restructuring efforts, through our process efficiency initiatives, we have built a very efficient cost base. And now, with the prospect of the volume and revenue growth, we are able to load this very efficient base with more revenue overall. And that's what will drive OPEX as percent of revenue down. So it's not so much a cost-cutting program in the next 5 years. It's more loading this efficient base with more volume and revenue.
So it is very volume dependent. You need to get the volume back into the system in order to get
the revenue overall, yes.
Okay. Within that. And you are in some markets where the currencies are very volatile. How does that impact your ability to get that margin?
We did refer to input cost and effects as being, if you on how input costs and effects will develop. On effects, we have some more volatility ahead of us, particularly in Nigeria. Already we have assumed for this year internally that we will see some 30 to 35% transactional effects impact from a deemed devaluation because it's happening already out there in the market. Actually, today, this afternoon, we will hear from the Central Bank of Nigeria what they are proposing in terms of introducing some more flexibility in the market, so we will see what this entails. However, we have built a devaluation of the currency from where the official rate is today, and we expect that after 17, overall, there will be some stability coming back, definitely continuing depreciation, because we are talking about emerging markets, but not to the tune of 175 million, for example, FX impact that we saw in 2015, or the 120 million that we anticipate for 2016. Certainly a lot less than that, continuing depreciation, but we have built depreciation of the currencies in our model.
We'll get back to Nigeria in a second because that's obviously quite interesting. But if we, before we do that, if we just divide the OPEX, where is there also a regional opportunity there for further? Because right now you've focused quite a bit on it the last few years, but not in Russia, not the markets like that.
Yes, the majority of our initiatives was in the established markets over the past few years. I would say we are two-thirds, more than two-thirds of the way there. There is still some work to do, but we are getting towards the end. Now our focus turns also to emerging, particularly in Russia and Nigeria. We started a couple of years ago, and we will be accelerating from this year onwards with our initiatives on the cost front in these markets too.
Are there any questions at this point?
Thank you. Good morning. So you mentioned energy is a major driver for the business. Could you give us a sense of the potential, in a sense, what's the mix of the business for energy, and then what's driving the category in your view? And then finally, on the how has the opportunity changed with the, I guess, synchronization of the Coca-Cola and the Monster model coming together? We're going to talk about the energy opportunity and the drivers.
Yes, we refer to the energy opportunity, and the energy opportunity is far more evident looking at the revenue per case. We have started the dual approach a few years back, and that is both Burn and Monster. Now, following the agreement between the Coca-Cola Company and Monster, and having Monster taking over the energy, this will allow us to move to the rest of the territory, and as we speak, we have already launched in big markets like Russia. Currently, also it is Italy and Romania, and we expect from our big markets to conclude with Nigeria towards the end of the year. So within 16, potentially the first few months of 17, we will have all our 28 markets having the dual approach, Monster and Burn. With this in mind, the opportunity here is, I would say, rather more evident in the revenue per case, and I referred a little while ago to the fact that energy is 2.5 times higher revenue per case than our average. With this in mind, we expect and we look forward to see by 2020 doubling our energy, still as a base is very low. It's about 1% of the revenue. So we look forward to see that going to 2%. Now, the last part of your question was with regards to consumers. We see the last couple of years that there is a very good momentum, a very good trend with energy. And that is also very exciting because that's a relatively high revenue category. And we do see that it sources potentially from sparkling. And that in our territory is mainly competition. And we have seen also few indications that it sourced from other categories, and those are insights that we are also evaluating a bit more. So we are very excited overall with the potential of the category, and that's why we have been accounting in the next couple of years to doubling the category in our portfolio.
But everybody's very excited about Monster, but that begs the question, why dilute your efforts now? Why keep Burn? What's the difference between the two?
Well, that is not diluting the efforts at all, Tristan. And we have been very, very proud of the dual approach. And I'm referring to the dual approach because each of the two brands have a role. And if I could simplify that, there is Burn that mainly addresses the white collar, and then Monster that mainly focuses behind blue collar. And the positioning, the communication, the connection with our consumers is very, very different.
I push back. Maybe let's just focus on your core markets that go back to Nigeria. So you're expecting a 35%, or are you baking it in? What does that mean? How can you just unpack how you think about it? How do you prepare a business for a situation like that?
Well, we have been working since the beginning of the year on a number of fronts. First of all, with the Coca-Cola Company and our suppliers, given the fact that there was practically no liquidity in terms of foreign currency in the market. We have been doing quite a few pre-buys ahead of the curve, particularly in resin, but also in sugar. Wherever necessary, in particular with regard to capex that required hard currency, we were stepping in with hard currency support. So there were a number of initiatives that would see the business continue uninterrupted throughout the year until we saw what measures would come into play to restore liquidity in the market. So hopefully with what will be announced today and gradually as the market absorbs the new regime, we will get towards the end of the year with a situation where we will have a de facto significant devaluation, which we are expecting. And in some respects, it would benefit us because it will restore liquidity and we can start again operating as normal. As I said, we have built in the impact already of that potential devaluation in our guidance when we talked about 115 to 120 million FX impact this year. So hopefully things before the year end will gradually get back to normality.
But even leading up to this situation, you guys have been remarkably robust compared to some other categories. So how do you look at consumer behavior over the last year in Nigeria? Everybody's complaining how bad the consumer is, yet Coke keeps on growing.
Yes. Well, let me start by saying that we have been working and enjoying Nigeria for the last 60 years. Couple of elements here. The first, we have been really working, building capabilities, and I think we are unparalleled in terms of distribution. Currently, we are covering a bit more than 80% of the total universe. And as we said in the Investors Day, we are doing an every dealer survey, which obviously will cover Nigeria, start from the big cities. This will reset the actual number of outlets, so this would allow us for an opportunity to increase our coverage. So distribution and capabilities behind distribution is one thing. Second, we have been continuously focusing behind innovation. And let me share a few examples. So the first element of innovation has to do with product. You will recall last year we launched Pulpy. Pulpy has been doing fantastically well, and the rest of our brands have been doing very well. Juice is most probably the highest growth category. Last year, we concluded the year with 20-plus percent growth. We're very happy to see Q1 at 45%. So that's one element. There's a second element that has to do with pack innovation. We have been focusing a lot behind PET. You recall a few years back, Nigeria was only glass market, and we have recently launched a 600 ml PET, and there are additional SKUs in PET even this year. The third element, or the fourth element, has to do with affordability. We have been focusing a lot behind affordability, so obviously with the innovation that you heard, that helps us address not only the price points, but also the revenue per case. Now, we have seen Nigeria growing very well. There are structural elements that support that, like young population, growing GDP, urbanization, and obviously our own strategic priorities. Nigeria will continue to be a key growth driver for the group. In the beginning of the year, we said that 16 is going to be another year of growth. We said mid-single digit. Today, most probably, we would say mid to high single digit. And obviously, we take into consideration the external environment, what we heard a little while ago from Mihaly. So Nigeria will continue to be a key growth driver for Hellenic.
I'm confident. The other side of that in your troubled markets, we can call them, is Russia. And unlike normally when markets go into a recession, beer tends to suffer more than soft drinks. Soft drinks tend to be hurt more than beer, but in Russia we're seeing the opposite. You've been down, but it's not been off a cliff. So how have you maintained your Russian business?
Well, I don't think we should compare ourselves with beer, and I'm saying that because there were other headwinds besides and behind the macros. We are following closely Russia. You are absolutely right. In the overall NARTD, we have been consistently and continuously outperforming the market. And that's behind our strategy, that's behind the focus on execution. Very recent example is 15. We have seen the overall sparkling market going down double digit. And looking at Coke trademark, we were one of the three global markets that piloted the one brand strategy, and we're extremely excited. We have launched Coke Zero, and also we have launched entry pack. So with all these initiatives and obviously the execution, Coke trademark was -2 versus minus double digit. So that's one example. Now looking at the situation to date, not very different to what we said in the beginning of the year. We were expecting that this overall difficult external environment will continue. And we do see first part of the year so far the overall market at a double-digit decline. We reiterate that as we move towards the second part of the year, this decline will decelerate. We reiterate that our expectation is that 16 is going to be a better year for the market. And we reiterate that we will once again outperform the market. And we do have some good indications. We see the oil at 50 or 50 plus, and the ruble, which has the tendency to stabilize below 75, and you recall it was up to 85 in the beginning of the year.
Maybe just one lost market or a combination. Going into 2008, being exposed to Greece and Italy was not a great situation, to say the least. What does the business look like today compared to 2008? What have you done through this recessionary period to stabilize it, basically, where we are today?
Well, very different business in both Italy and Greece. Well, first of all, starting with in both countries, 6, 7, 8 years of deterioration in disposable income, peaking unemployment in Italy around 11, in Greece around 25, and that is total unemployment. If you focus in the working sort of domain, that probably in Greece is more than 50%, and in Italy it's more than 20%. So this drove a considerable deterioration in per capita, which resulted into more or less 40% less volume in Greece and about 20% less volume in Italy. So what we have done, as we have been saying, most of our investments in restructuring has been in established and developing. So in Greece, I would say close to 60% infrastructure optimization, improvement of our plant footprints. In Italy, around 50%. So that is one area of heavy investments behind restructuring. Second, consistently focusing on route to market. And obviously, right now, again, with the Every Dealer survey, that would give us a very good, accurate information on what the universe is. And building on our capabilities, we will reset our route to market. We have been working a lot connecting with our consumers and obviously working with the Coca-Cola company with some excellent advertising, both in Italy and in Greece. We have been working a lot behind our OBVPC. Examples are additional launches. In Greece, we had as a major pack the 330 can, a year and a half, 2 years ago, we launched the 375, balancing volume per trip while at the same time defending revenue per case. In Italy, we have been focusing a lot on Horeca. Last year, we concluded the first phase of introduction of glass bottle in Horeca. We covered more than 140,000 outlets. So a lot of initiatives that would allow us to address the new environment. And looking forward, in Italy, we do see the external environment stabilizing. The first year that we see that disposable income is not going south. So that obviously is very encouraging on top of all of our initiatives. In Greece, the external environment is difficult and continues to be difficult. We are extremely encouraged to see Greece both in 14 and in 15 being overall positive. That's where we are today.
Maybe let's just move to the broader topic about the Coke system. Okay. Yeah, you're a bottler who you've debated about it. You're very aligned to the Coke system. Why is that an advantage in your view? And what do you think the other guys that are less aligned, and there are a few of them out there, are missing because you're more aligned?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't want to compare ourselves with other bottlers. Alignment is part of winning together. And without alignment, we cannot win together. Now, you know, this alignment is extremely important, and we have seen strong elements of alignment. Let me start with the renewed focus on revenue. And this right now is an integral part of our discussion. We have been step-changing our investments together. Last year, in established and in developing, our marketing went up more than 20%. We are
together.
Well, it's almost 50-50. The company is covering consumer, we are covering customer, but it's 20% each, so the total is substantially increased. We're extremely excited with the new era. For us, this is a new marketing era, and I'm referring to the one brand strategy, an element of which is Taste the Feeling. Awesome. I mean, we have launched that in all of our markets. We are extremely excited. So a lot of elements that allows us to move out faster in the market and win in the market. And a very good example was 15, and another very good example would be 16.
You just alluded to it, and I guess what are the big changes you've seen as a bottler in the Coke system the last 5 years?
Well, a couple of changes. I would start with what I just said, the renewed focus on the revenue. That's one thing. Obviously, the focus behind cost, and that is across the board. We are really excited with delayering because this allows us to take, you know, faster decision at the country where the wealth is being created. We are extremely happy with Marco's creative approach. Awesome. I mean, we haven't seen anything like that in the last 10 years, I would say. We believe the one brand strategy is the absolute right thing to do. We have seen elements of Taste the Feeling that connect extremely well with a consumer, both emotionally and functionally. James was very clear with regards to the Coca-Cola focus behind the brands. He was very clear behind accelerating refranchising. So a lot of elements that I believe all of them are definitely in the right direction.
Maybe just to pick up on the refranchising point, we're seeing some unprecedented changes in the bottling system, and the commonality is an alignment of typologies. You know, CCEP is a developed market bottler. You're quite unique in the system by being emerging, developing, and established. Why is that an advantage? Or why is that, you would say, well, you're missing out on the managerial synergies, basically, of having the same typology. Why do you think you have an edge there? Or why do you think it works?
Yes, we do believe it works. This is the business model of Hellenic for the past almost 20 years. And here, if you see the drivers with regards to cash generation, that is the stable markets, so established and developing, which allows us to accelerate investments behind emerging, which allow us to drive the growth both on top line in and expanding our market leadership in emergence. So that's one element. You referred to managerial synergies. Well, here you will allow me to sort of leave two seats behind, even within established. You see markets that are very, very different. Example, Switzerland and Italy, very different market. Or Spain and Germany, very different markets. And we heard that yesterday also from the CCEP presentation. With this in mind, for us, it's all about leadership, and we support our leaders to take the critical experiences, also the capabilities that are required to manage the countries. So at the end of the day, it's leadership. That's our belief, and that's what we have been doing the last 20 years.
We touched upon the, you spoke a little bit about bolt-on acquisitions. So when you buy something, you bought Neptune, I think in Lithuania, it was a water brand. How does that work with the Coca-Cola company? Is this a 50-50 deal, or how do you think about acquisitions that are for bolt-on together with Coke?
Well, looking back, in all of the cases, in some cases, the Coca-Cola company went first and we joined, or in other cases, we went first and then they joined. A very good example is Roma Quella in Austria, or what we did in Russia. We went on with Neptunas. We bought Neptunas on our own. We are in the phase of integrating Neptunas. So obviously, this will be far more evident, the integration and the prospects. And we do expect that the Coca-Cola company will join.
But now you have the opposite situation in Nigeria, where you decided not to join the Coca-Cola company on their recent acquisition.
Yes. This, again, was something that we have been discussing with the Coca-Cola company, and it's obvious for us. This is a minority stake, and within 3 years, the Coca-Cola company will have 100%. So obviously, we wouldn't want to be a part of a minority. We would sort of always, when we are in the market, we want to sit in the driver's seat.
You've also been a bit more, it's not a priority, but you've been a bit more open to territorial expansion than you've been in the past. Obviously, the one that everybody's thinking about is Coca-Cola Beverages Africa. If Coca-Cola decides to implement a change of control clauses, would that be of an interest, or what kind of regions would be of an interest to you?
So, first of all, you are absolutely right. Our focus is and has been to go back to the pre-crisis margin levels, and there are two key areas that we have been very loud, that's top-line growth and accelerating cost efficiencies. So this has been and is at the core of the radar screen. As we move on, and we are very much encouraged looking at our progress in 15, and also we have been discussing progressing in 16, we are open to opportunities. Here, I would like to leave two or three things as criteria for those opportunities. The first one, our positioning is growth. So we have a growth positioning. So the opportunity should align with this growth positioning. The second, we really want to bring value in the table. So bringing value has potentially two elements, building on our expertise, and we are more than 50% emerging. And within emerging, we are very fortunate to have Russia and Nigeria. And the second thing, also you have been hearing us saying, the focus behind what we call the borderless Europe, so adjacencies. So those are two things that we believe we can really add value. If there is and when there is an opportunity in Africa, definitely we will evaluate this opportunity, provided that it connects with the three criteria that we have been sharing.
very clear. So if nothing happens, you do have some nice cash coming through your system. Your net debt is quite low. Your balance sheet will start looking sloppy pretty soon. So what's your plan around that, if nothing happens, assuming?
I don't know whether sloppy is the right word in this period of volatility in what you described as well. Certainly it gives us a lot of flexibility. First of all, our number one priority is reinvesting in the business, and thus the macros are becoming more and more of a tailwind. Obviously, this becomes very important. Secondly, you touched upon it as well, the bolt-on acquisitions. We want to have the flexibility to cover such opportunities. And from then on, we do have the progressive dividend policy. We will continue to grow our dividend in line with the projected EPS growth. From then on, if at any point we do need to look into the structure of balance sheet and we want to optimize, a special dividend can be an option, cannot be ruled out. We will not be doing buybacks because of the requirement to have at least 50% free float. Therefore, the special dividend could be a way to optimize the balance sheet.
Maybe before we close, any questions? Michael?
Thank you. Can I just ask a point of clarification, perhaps? You know, when you talked about the target, the pre-crisis margin level, 11%, I think if I understood you correctly, you said that input costs, fluctuations in input costs will determine when you're going to reach that target. Now, given that a lot of raw material prices are at fairly low points at this point in the cycle, I was wondering if you could tell us what your approach is towards the procurement of raw materials, what your visibility is, and what you have basically baked into this outlook. Thank you.
So we have built in a low to mid single digit increase per annum all the way to 2020 in what we have described. And as I mentioned earlier, after a significant devaluation of the Naira by 2017, we are assuming for all emerging market currencies a normal depreciation like we have seen before 2014 in our market. So we have built in this model of getting to 11% by 2020, both an input cost inflation as well as an FX depreciation. Now, if things get much better or much worse, obviously there are other levers potentially which will move as well. Inflation, for example, which will determine also the speed of pricing in some of our markets, or acceleration of cost restructuring initiatives and so on. We have to see how all this will work together. And that's why we said that at the end of the day, an FX and input cost environment, which we do not control directly, we can only defend to some extent with some hedging, will determine the speed at which we will get to 11% before or slightly after 2020. But we do have also contingency plans that we can pull if things get too far from the assumptions that I just mentioned.
I'm told to wrap it up. Michalis, Dimitris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tristan.